Okay, folks, you are listening to the latest chapter of Life on Planet Porky, the latest exciting adventures involving myself, the Porkmeister, and, of course, the rock chick writer extraordinaire, Miss Leslie Ann Jones. Miss Jones, how are we at this very moment?
Yeah, cool, Mike. Thanks very much. Yeah. It's been quite a pacey, feisty start to the year so far.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. As we're recording now, by the way, I'm in my element because the weather outside is rain-lashed. That's all I can call it. And the raindrops are bouncing off the Velux windows of my office as I talk to you. And it's rather a, you know, it's a rar winter's day. And
it's quite atmospheric, isn't it, of the weather at the moment?
Yeah, and that's my...
I must admit, I enjoy it. And as long as you're dressed for the weather...
Yeah, I agree.
You know, there's no reason why not to still get out there and go tramping through the fields and the forests along the beaches and so on. It's good for the soul.
It certainly is. I go walking over the North Downs and it's great. I don't always wear a coat. If it's not cold, I don't wear a coat because what's the point of getting a coat wet? It takes ages for your coat to dry. I never wear, for instance, an overcoat in rain because my overcoats are so thick it would take a week for them to dry. You know what I mean? And rain also has a particular odour, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. Petrichor, I think, is the word for the smell of rain on earth.
Oh, I didn't know.
I think that's the word. I went to the most pretentious party ever in my career a few years ago now. It was in the basement of Liberty, the department store.
Yeah.
And it was thrown by Duran Duran, who were launching a set of four different perfumes.
Wow.
And they were pontificating preposterously on all these words for various kinds of scents. Which just reminded me when you said that. But you know what? You can wear a waterproof coat.
Yeah, you can, yeah. I wonder whatever happened to the Packamax. When I was little, when we went to school, everybody had a Packamax in their satchel, which, for the benefit of our younger listeners, amongst the millions who tune in every week, a Packamax was a plastic coat wrapped up and put into a little plastic bag. It was about the size of a sandwich, wasn't it? And whenever it rained, you got it out and put it on, and it protected your school uniform from getting wet.
But they were, A, made of plastic, which we're trying to avoid nowadays, and, B, they were horribly uncool.
Mm.
I mean, we just looked like complete dorks in them, didn't we, really?
Yeah, but these days, at football matches sometimes, in countries where the weather's very inclement, you see people sitting there in these sort of plastic ponchos, don't you? I'm sure we could get back to one of those and wouldn't have to damage the environment. You could make them of something else.
Yeah, ponchos are a lot cooler, I think. They have that sort of Mexican look, don't they?
Yes.
The shape of them and so on. But they don't hang so well. So you get a gust of wind, you get a poncho in the face, you can't see where you're going.
Well, you're absolutely right, but there we are. Now
we've got to be practical, Mr. Parry.
Yeah, I've got to be practical, Miss Jones. Of course you always are. Now let's talk about the man of the moment, because as far as you're concerned, Miss Jones, with your Welsh ancestry, that man in fact is Gareth Bale, yes?
Gareth Bale. Mm. I know how to say Gareth in Welsh because my brother is called Gareth. We've talked about that before.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, yes, it's on everybody's lips because the man has announced his retirement at the age of 33.
Very young. People are up in... Very young.
Yeah, but look at the injuries he's sustained over the past few years and the surgery, all the rest of it. Mm. He's made enough money. He wants to live a different life now. And I think... You know, they got as far as they could, Wales, in the recent World Cup tournament, and he's not going to see another World Cup tournament, so it's a good time to retire.
Yeah, well, you say that. I mean, certainly he got paid enough. He was on $600,000 a week at Real Madrid, it is rumoured. And then, of course, he went back to Spurs on loan, so they probably split that weekly salary or something like that. But I mean, you're absolutely right, he's got tens of millions of pounds. He's always had a very strange relationship with the Madrid fans, and a lot of that was, remember that famous flag? Somebody handed him a flag after a Welsh game, and they were quite victorious in something a couple of years ago. And the flag said, golf, Wales, Madrid. And that further damaged the relationship he had with the fans at Real Madrid, who always thought that he never quite gave enough to the club, you know, in terms of speaking Spanish and pledging his troth to the club and always wanting to get away on international duty and play for Wales. He found it difficult, as sometimes English players do on the continent.
Well, and he's not an English player, of course. He's Welsh.
I'm sorry,
and
of course, yeah.
There is something about being Welsh which holds the Welsh to their national pride and their Welshness.
Yes.
You see it so often. There have been actually a few over the years, but these polls that they hold in Wales as to the greatest Welshman in history.
Yeah.
And the one who tends to win it is a person a person that most Englishmen haven't even heard of, be honest. Which was Owen Glyndŵr, the greatest Welshman of all time, who was the last native Welshman to hold the title the Prince of Wales.
Oh, was he?
Who led a fierce revolt against English rule in Wales during medieval times and was a great nationalist leader.
No.
And there is something about Welsh nationalism which tends to mean that the person doesn't give themselves wholeheartedly to any other nation.
Yeah.
More so than the English, I think. Yeah. We bend a lot more easily, don't we?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I thought Offa was the great Welshman of the past, because where I grew up...
Offa's Dyke,
that's
yeah.
Right, yeah, where I grew up in Chester, right on the border with Wales, you could follow the Offa's Dyke Trail, you know what I mean, for about 80 miles around the borders, down to Shrewsbury and all that kind of stuff. So there was a pub there called the Offa's Dyke we used to use a lot, so...
But wasn't his ancestry Danish or Norwegian or one of those? I don't know.
Yeah. We all got antecedents in other nations, haven't we?
Yeah, we do.
You know, we all...
Especially if in the case of the English, because there was no indigenous English person to begin with.
No, there wasn't. Anglo-Saxons. You're absolutely right. And why we don't speak French these days, I've never been able to work that out. When William the Conqueror came over here and did us in 1066, why didn't we all speak French from that moment on?
Yeah, well, made of stronger stuff,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, I suppose you're right.
It is interesting seeing all these headlines about the greatest Welshman, because, you know, you can string them off the top of your head, as you mentioned, and Aaron Bevan, founder of the NHS.
David Lloyd George,
Prime Minister of Britain, founder of the welfare state.
And Mega Shag, of course.
Well, of course, but what about Dylan Thomas?
Dylan Thomas, yeah.
The poet, author of Under Milkwood, or Richard Burton, Anthony Hopkins, the actors. What about, and now here's a forgotten name, Cliff Morgan.
Cliff Morgan, well, you might be right there. Great rugby player, went on to become an outstanding broadcaster in his own right, not just on rugby, but on all sports for the BBC, so you may well be right. Getting back to Dylan Thomas, by the way, he's legendary in my mind. I studied under Milkwood at school. I think it must have been O-level rather than A-level, and loved the play, you know, just brilliant.
So who did you play in that then? I think we all did under Milkwood at school, didn't we?
No, it wasn't a play. We studied the book for O-level English.
No, well, it was a play. It was a play for radio.
Yeah, it was a radio play.
It was written as a... And we all performed in it.
Oh, I didn't.
We used to sit around like in little...
little groups,
you know,
Yeah,
on chairs on the stage, because it was a play for radio. There was no actual action.
Yeah,
it was all dialogue.
Yeah.
I played Polly Garter, the slapper.
Oh, was she the one of whom he said, was once kissed at the gate when she wasn't watching and has never been kissed since, though she's never stopped watching? You know what I mean? Or something like that.
Yeah, it was that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And she loved a man whose name was Dick. He was strong as an ox and 3 feet thick.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. That's about all I can remember. Yeah. We won't go further on that one.
You know, when I got a bit older, I researched Dylan Thomas's history, and he's a legend to me because he drank himself to death by drinking 34 large whiskies in a single session, I think at the Chelsea Hotel in New York, wasn't it?
He did used to frequent the Chelsea, and he had his own place. Well, a place that he frequented so often, it was known as Dylan Thomas's hotel, which was Brown's Hotel.
Oh, was it? Yeah.
Down in Larne in Wales.
Oh, really?
And do you remember Neil Morrissey? Neil Morrissey,
yes,
who was in...
Yes, I do. He opened a hotel, Neil Morrissey.
He bought the very one that Dylan Thomas used to drink in.
There you go.
Yeah.
Amazing, there we go. There is a Welsh footballer who didn't have the same sort of passion for his country, it is alleged. as Gareth Bale, and that was Ryan Giggs. The constant criticism from Welsh people during Ryan Giggs's illustrious career was that he was always pulling out of Welsh squads. Now, you know, obviously he was playing at the very highest level, the Manchester United. I think he won about 13 Premier League titles. So, you know, when you've got someone like Sir Alex Ferguson sort of saying, do you really need to go off and play for Wales when we're playing Barcelona next week and all that kind of stuff, you know, and the pressure's on him. But you never got the impression from Ryan Giggs, who ironically, of course, went on to become the Welsh team national manager. You never got the impression that he wanted to race off to the Welsh training camp as much as Gareth Bale.
No, there's, I'm sorry to say, something very dislikable about Ryan Giggs.
I'm afraid...
If you're talking rival footballers, I would have to put forward a case for John Charles, who played for Leeds United, I think, when I was a child.
He did. And he was called the gentleman giant. Yeah.
That's it. He was 6'2", wasn't he? And went off to play for Juventus,
right.
Of course.
He did.
I think the greatest all-rounder that British football has ever produced.
Yeah, no, you may well be. I think he was the first real player who went out. I remember reading a book about him when I was a kid, and this, you know, this big bronzed guy standing on the beach in Italy and all that. And I thought, wow, that's what I'm going to do when I get older. Ryan Giggs, we should make it clear to our millions of listeners, is currently the subject of an investigation which hasn't been sorted out because he stood trial recently and a jury could not find a verdict. So Ryan Giggs is facing another prospect, another trial this year, just to let people know. And, of course, totally innocent as we speak.
Until proven guilty.
Well, yeah, exactly, as we speak. But anyway, look, what I was going to say about Gareth Bale was you just can't imagine anybody ever ringing up the sort of success. You got 5 Champions League victories. I mean, just astonishing. Most professional footballers, even in the Premier League, don't even play in the Champions League. Gareth Bale played and won 5 Champions League finals. I think he was injured for one of them, but he still got the medal. But anyway, nevertheless, I suppose we should move from a Welsh national hero to a British, I'm not sure he's a hero, a British national figure. And that, of course, is Prince Harry. Because, look, we tried to make this a Prince Harry-free zone here on Planet Porky. But it is, you'd have to be living on Mars not to have some sort of view on what's going on at the moment. It's utterly relentless. And funny enough, just before you and I started working here, hang on, I'm sorry, I can hear something happening. I think it's my phone or something.
What's going on at your end?
Yeah, no, it's, what have I done here? I can hear something buzzing. Wait a minute. Right. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Harry, okay. Presumably you watched the Tom Bradby interview
on Sunday night. Do you know what? I didn't want to watch it. And what I watched was, I watched the third episode of a brilliant TV production called Stonehouse, okay?
I watched that. Yeah. I watched the whole of it, yeah.
I thought it was utterly brilliant. I thought that McFadden, what's his first name? Michael or Martin or something, you know, the male actor.
Matthew.
I thought he kind of overdid the clownish, foppish politician a little bit, because I remember Stonehouse as he was, and he always took himself a lot more seriously. But
it was a cartoonish approach, wasn't it, really?
It was a cartoonish approach. You're absolutely right, yeah. But they pulled it off. It was brilliant. So I watched that, and I was about to go to bed, literally. You know, I sometimes do go to bed early if I've been up at 3:30 or 4:30 doing early television. So as that finished, because that was on, was it on iPlayer or Netflix or something? I can't remember now. Suddenly the television just suddenly clicked back into normal mode, and all of a sudden I'm watching the credits for Prince William, and I thought, oh, I'll watch 5 minutes of this. But in the end, I had to watch all of it, as I'm sure you did, because it was just spellbinding, you know?
Well, first of all, I thought I'd better watch this because, you know, you've got to be in the conversation. Everybody's talking about it.
Yeah.
I did think that Tom Bradby handled it very badly. He seemed almost enthralled to Prince Harry and was apologetic about the points he was making. Mm. And as time ticked on, I thought, why are we giving this guy so much airtime? There is a war on.
Yeah.
I thought, shut up about how hard done by you are,
yes,
and go and do something useful, like drive trucks loads of supplies to the Ukraine or something like that.
Yep.
But really, you know, everybody is struggling at the moment. Mm-hmm. And your privileged mental health issues, yes, and your therapists, yes, and how hard done by your wife is and all the rest of it. Mm. I think, really, do we need to know all that? Mm. I think he's done himself a huge disservice, A, by publishing the book, yeah, and B, by doing so much live publicity about it.
Yeah, no, I agree with all of that. I mean, some of the, you know, some of the statements he made, you know, to start boasting about how many of the Taliban he killed, 25, and all, just utter nonsense. You know, I couldn't kind of get it. I don't know what he's after. Or, I mean, it's obviously money, I think. But, you know, this revenge mission he's on because he hates the British press. And the one thing that he doesn't understand is, oh, you know, and accusing Camilla of ringing up her friends in the press and leaking stories. That is utter and absolute nonsense. In all our years in journalism, Miss Jones, how often did somebody ring us up and tell us a story? They didn't. We used to put bits and pieces of facts together and come up with a story. And, you know,
If Camilla had ever called a journalist, yeah, even somebody like Richard Kay, yes, who was a friend of Diana's and, yeah, you know, was known for being trustworthy, that kind of thing, if she ever dared to play that game,
yeah,
that would be a story in itself, oh, and course, somebody would write it.
Of course, it would have become public within days. It would have leaked out and all that.
Hours, yeah.
Hours, without an hours, yeah. What people don't understand is that hundreds of people work around Buckingham Palace. And if you go into one of the pubs around there, the Bag of Nails or something like that, you're going to bump into somebody who works in Buckingham Palace, and they've got friends, they tell their friends, and then, you know, that's how stuff gets out, not ringing up, you know, journalists and all. What's such an utter loaded tripe and all that kind of stuff. But
they also sell stories, you know. Yeah. We mustn't be under the impression that those on the inside are averse or above that kind of thing.
No, I totally agree. I mean, remember Colleen and the other lady, you know, Vardy, right?
Rebecca Vardy, yeah. Yeah,
Rebecca Vardy and Colleen Rooney. I mean, allegedly, Rebecca Vardy was playing just that game, ringing up friends, you know, in Fleet Street and selling stories and asking money for them. As you quite rightly just pointed out, that is very, very soon going to go public because it's the sort of behaviour people just talk about, you know, can't believe it's happening, you know what I mean? But anyway.
I think Harry, he's clearly very damaged. He's, what is he, 38?
Yes.
He lost his mother when he was a very vulnerable young child.
Yes.
He had been sent away to school at a very young age. Yeah. We know about boarding school syndrome,
yeah,
and how damaging that is. Mm. Also, William and Harry had to witness their mother having lots of affairs in the public eye,
yeah,
so they'd have been damaged by that as well.
True.
Also damaged by the fact that their father was having a relationship with Camilla behind their mother's back,
yeah,
and then they were expected to accept her as a stepmother.
Mm.
I can see all of that stacking up, yeah, as reasons to be disgruntled.
Mm.
But in my bitter experience, the way to get back in the family fold and restore your family relationships, mm, is not to criticize them publicly,
mm,
and not to air your grievances, but it's to try and put things back together privately.
Yes, no, I totally agree. That thing about leaking, by the way, just to get back to that, I read something that made it absolutely clear about this leaking situation. Nobody even knew that there'd been an investigation into allegations that Meghan was bullying staff for 2.5 years, right? So if Buckingham Palace are ringing up the papers every 5 minutes to tip them off on stories, nobody did for 2.5 years on that. And I think that just says it all, that Harry's, you know, deluded in the way he thinks information suddenly appears in the public domain.
Did you read that text exchange between Meghan and Kate, which is
crept out? I've only just seen that recently. That was a blow-by-blow account about the bridesmaid's dress, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, it was. And it was, I've got to say, it's sometimes quite hard to interpret the tone of language in
a text. I agree, yeah.
Sometimes I can take things the wrong way, yeah, and I think, oh, I feel a bit miffed about something that somebody's written to me. And then it turns out that they didn't mean it quite like,
yes,
that at all.
No, that's what happens.
So it's very hard.
That's what happens in tweets all the time. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, it's hard to interpret.
Yeah, yeah.
But it did seem a bit curt to me. There wasn't much friendliness,
yeah,
between those two women. And yes, it's a fraught thing, isn't it? Organising a wedding, not only your own dress, but all the bridesmaids' dresses. To me, somebody else should have been in charge of putting together the bridesmaids' dresses so that Meghan wasn't having to worry about it. Rather than Kate sending her a tweet so bitching about the fact that Charlotte's dress was too big, too long, too wide, too everything else. It made her cry. You know, I just let somebody else handle those things. They are the royal family, after all.
No, I think you're probably right. Harry's just admitted now he doesn't see any way back into the family. Well, I could have told him that about 6 months ago. I mean,
maybe even longer ago.
Well, exactly. His father and Prince William must be tearing the hair out. But anyway, look, what's that famous expression? You've made your bed, now lie in it. So that's what he's going to have to do. I don't know what...
My mum always says that. But don't you think that Diana said she was almost on a mission to destroy the royal family herself? She wasn't able to do it, so Harry has taken upon himself to do it instead.
But in her stead. But he comes over as just being envious, jealous, bitter, you know, about the fact he's got an older brother. But as it's been said many times over the last couple of days, elder siblings usually get the drop on their younger siblings, hand down clothes and all that kind of stuff. It's the way family life works, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, except when your brother is going to grow up to be the king.
Yeah, I suppose so.
You need to find another role for yourself. He could have become somebody very useful in public life.
Yes, he could have done. And at one time he was, you know, he'd become the army hero and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, this will go on forever. People have said, oh, well, he'll run out of things to talk about in about, you know, 2 years' time, but he won't. The reason, Miss Jones, why you write such great books like, you know, Who Killed John Lennon, is because if you've had such a famous life, there will always be another book about that person. People will still be writing books about John Lennon in 20 years' time, won't they?
Yeah, but John Lennon had a useful life created music that will last way, way beyond, well, obviously beyond his lifetime, but way beyond our lifetimes as well.
That's true.
What has Harry ever created that benefits the world?
No, nothing. I totally agree. But there you go. So I'm sure we could still be talking about this time next year. So we must move on. Did you see... I saw a piece by a lady called Sue Perkins, okay? And Sue Perkins is a sort of... I don't know what she is, actually, sort of entertainer or commentator or something on TV. I think
she's a comic, isn't she?
I think
she,
yeah, really? Female comic, yeah. And she said, you know, reveals, in inverted commas, I suffer from ADHD, which is some attention deficit sort of complaint or something like that. But when I read what the symptoms of it were, I thought, well, hang on, I suffer from all of that. It seems to me, you know what I mean? It seems to me that ADHD, which is what, you know, she's come out with this, you know, and everybody says, oh, she's so brave to, you know, confess you suffer from ADHD. To me, it just looks like the normal, you know, concerns, stresses and worries of everyday life.
Well, yeah, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder.
Right.
You have difficulty paying attention. That's you. That's me. You're a bit hyperactive and impulsive in your life. That's you. Yeah. That's me. Yeah. And you... I think the minute you put a label on something, suddenly everybody's got it.
Yes. Yeah, no, I...
You know, nobody had ADHD when I was a kid. Yeah.
No, I totally agree. I hadn't even heard about it till about a year ago, and then I could never remember what it stood for, you know what I mean? But
here's another thing. When we were children, when we were at school, everybody ate peanut butter sandwiches. Nobody had a nut allergy. What's that about?
Yeah, well, I don't want to make light of it, because people have actually died, haven't they?
They do have anaphylactic shock. Do you know what I think caused that?
Yeah.
Genetically modified peanuts.
Ooh, blimey, that's a theory. It's a scientific theory, Miss Jones.
That's my theory, and I'm sticking.
Getting back to the ADHD, you know, I keep reading stories, and this has been over the last 5 years, and all of a sudden a kind of, I would say, low-class celebrity suddenly speaks up and says, I've had suicidal thoughts. And all of a sudden, the rest of the lovey world all rushes out and says, so brave, you know what I mean? So, you know...
It's headline-grabbing, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's I haven't got a book out, or I haven't got anything in the public eye at the moment.
Yeah.
So let's talk about my mental health.
That's right. Yeah.
Because that's become the sort of subject du jour.
Yeah.
I think what a psychotherapist would tell you is that anybody who's talking about their suicide...
Yeah. Yeah.
isn't actually ever going to do it. No.
Life is tough and we have to get on with it. I don't think I've ever had actually suicidal thoughts, but I've had days of utter despair when everything's gone wrong, you know what I mean? And you can see more trouble coming down the track. And I just think we just have to get on with it. But then perhaps I'm very old-fashioned at that.
I'm not brave enough to have an injection, let alone to take my own life. So,
yeah, you know. I can totally agree with you there. I wouldn't have the courage to do it either. Okay, folks, you are listening to Life on Planet Porky. Thank you very much indeed for joining us today. Myself, the Portmeister, and, of course, the rock chick writer extraordinaire, Miss Leslie Ann James. I nearly forgot your name then for a minute. Sorry,
I was going to say, do you need a prompt?
Yeah, something like that. But it can happen in broadcasting, as you well know. I remember once interviewing David Cameron in the studio, and Cameron was then leader of the opposition, so it must have been before 2010, okay, when he became Prime Minister of the Coalition. But I was talking to him. He was pretending to be a football fan. It was on TalkSport. He pretended to be a football fan, and he was actually walking around with carrying a mug with the TalkSport emblem on it. You know, he was walking around the programming floor before he came into the studio. You know, I'm one of the lads and all that kind of stuff and all that. And we got talking. And you know what? Halfway through the interview, I completely forgot who I was talking to. I was looking at his face. I looked at his face and I thought, I don't know this guy's name. You know, why am I talking to him? I just went into a trance. And it must have been because it was so uninteresting, you know, I'd lost interest in it or something like that. But ever since then, it doesn't matter who I'm interviewing, I write it on a piece of paper, fold it in two, and put it in front of me as a cue card so I never forget who I'm talking to, because it can happen.
What's your name again?
Yes, absolutely, Miss Jones. You're absolutely right. Now then, listen, don't like to get onto this boring subject of Dry January, but we do because I have to support Dry January. I was talking to my old mate Stephen Nolan on BBC Radio Ulster yesterday, okay, you know, about all this. And all these people came on, you know, it's good for your mental health. And, oh, you know, people who, you know, find alcohol a problem have now got an excuse to be able to give it up and all that. And I'm sorry, my long-term view is that if you're a moderate drinker, and I regard myself as a blado in modo drinker, that's bladderation in moderation, you don't need to give up booze in January or any other time of the year. And it's just virtue signalling so you can feel good about yourself when it comes to February.
Because deprivation always leads to overindulgence.
Yeah, exactly. February.
So if you have a dry January, you're going to have a completely slaughtered February.
Yes. No, I totally agree. And it doesn't make a lot of sense, does it? But anyway, there we go. I read another piece about a prominent lady in our business, Mariella Frostrup, okay?
I read that piece, yeah.
Celebrated her 60th birthday, okay? And I've worked with Mariella a few times and, you know, she's a very bright lady and all that kind of stuff. And she's come up with this vow that at 60 years of age now, she says, I'm only going to look forward, not backwards. Do you think you can go through life only looking forward?
No, you can't afford to look forward at this stage in the game because you're looking into the abyss in that case.
Yeah.
We've lived more life than we've got left to live.
Yeah.
I think, of course, your past life influences you going forward.
Yeah.
And we have to keep moving forward. We haven't got a choice. Nothing can stop that.
Yeah.
But we shouldn't look too far ahead because that's death.
Mm.
Isn't it?
Well,
the past only exists in bits and pieces that you carry around in your head.
Yeah.
And the future does not exist. I think the now is the thing to focus on.
Yeah, I agree. Don't look back, don't look forward. Deal with what's happening now. And anyway, you've got to look back to try and make sure you don't make the same mistakes you made before when you're going forward. You know what I mean? You can't just say, it's behind me, I won't look in the rearview mirror. I mean, I've made so many mistakes in my life. A lot of them were avoidable, but a lot of them were, you know, flashes of temper or feelings that I'd been badly done to and I was retaliating or just, you know, bad decisions. And if I wasn't aware of all of those, I might make them all again.
I think that we are all accumulations physically and mentally.
Yeah.
So our bodies, aren't they, accumulations of bits of the planet and wear and tear and stuff like that.
Yes.
Our minds are also accumulations of events that happened in the past, things that we did, things that we didn't do. We have expectations of the future,
mm-hmm.
and we make projections into the future. That's why we make, although I don't, New Year's resolutions.
Yes.
I don't make them because I always break them on the 2nd of January.
Yeah.
And I think we predict But we can't know how it's going to be. Mm. The only thing we can do anything about is right now, today.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with all of that. And you've got to have a philosophy in life, otherwise you'd go mad. I read another piece, by the way, about another woman. I seem to have read a lot of pieces about a lot of women this week, Miss Jones.
Are you looking for something?
Oh, no, not at all. I just like soaking up all the info, and it just so happens I was reading these. It's a lady called Amanda Owen, okay? And she's...
Oh, you're always banging on about her.
Well, I've worked with her a few times, and I think I've said to you before, you know, she's a striking woman because she's very tall, she's very good looking, she used to be a model before she became a sheep farmer. And she's led an extraordinary life, 9 children, the last 2 or 3 of which she told me she gave birth to herself in the middle of the night when she got out of bed with her husband, went downstairs in the farmhouse, lit the roaring fire and gave birth to her own children. And she works and lives in the...
Well, we all give birth to our own children.
Yeah, but I mean, without any assistance from anybody else, she delivered the children herself, you know what I mean?
I think that was quite common back in the day, you know,
well,
when
she's not that
people
old. She's only 48.
No, back in the day, yeah. In my grandmother's generation, yeah. They all had their babies at home, and quite often a midwife didn't make it there in time.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah, well,
I think it's not that unusual, but I think I'm a bit off her, to be honest,
really?
Because she's not been very fair on her husband, has she?
Well,
she got a taste of the limelight and she abandoned him for a younger crew member and so on.
Well, you say that, but nobody knows what goes on between two people in marriage, do they? And, you know, it could have been going on for years, but...
Could have been, yeah.
You know, you have to take people as you see them. As I say, I've worked there and she, you know, she's a very, well, sort of dynamic woman and gets on with it. But anyway, there we are. Now, we've talked about Jimmy Page before, but it's his 79th birthday today. So just want to give him a quick mention, really. I mean, he's the ultimate rock star, isn't he?
I suppose he is, although I'm very confused about Jimmy Page because... I mean, I have to say this, and you do know this. We've talked about it before. Yeah. Harvey Weinstein went to prison for less.
Golly. Do you know what?
There is a girl called Laurie Mattox. Mm. She lives in Los Angeles. She's in her 60s now. Mm. But she was kidnapped by Jimmy Page when she was 13.
Goodness gracious, Miss Jones.
He pursued her. In fact, Led Zeppelin's tour manager helped to kidnap her, delivered her to Jimmy Page's room at the Hyatt Hotel, and she was imprisoned as his lover.
Good girl.
And as his sex slave.
Good God. I mean, this is...
Now, because he's 79, we've sort of overlooked this and think, what an elder statesman of rock. Mm. But this lady is still out there, still saying what happened to her. Mm. And she's saying also, we wouldn't want that for anybody's daughter, would we?
Yeah, no, of course we wouldn't. Has that all been detailed, by the way, and written about before?
Oh, it's in lots of books. Yeah,
yeah. Okay, well, that's right. Just trying to think.
Sorry, we're not breaking the law.
Lawyers. No, that's right. I tell you what, let's talk about somebody else who you may have a higher opinion, of, okay. And that is Miss Shirley Bassey, who is 86.
Oh, we love Shirley Bassey, who's also Welsh.
Yeah.
How old is she today?
86.
Is she really? Mm. She's astonishing, isn't
she? Yeah, she is absolutely astonishing. I think the only song I ever remember, well, no, there's 2 songs I remember singing. The first one was...
Goldfinger.
Goldfinger, obviously. Goldfinger.
Oh, you do it better than
me. Yeah, he's a man, the heart of gold. Or no, his heart is... cold. That was a line, wasn't it?
Who wrote that? Was it Don Black?
Ooh, could have been. I'm not sure, actually. But the other record I remember from my youth, because my mum and dad used to sing along to it, was The Minute He Walked in the Joint Bomb.
Da-da.
I could tell he were a man of distinction, a real big spender, good looking, so refined. Wouldn't you like to know what's going on in my mind? I know the words to it because...
Wow, that is incredible. You know those lyrics.
Yeah.
Spot on.
Yes.
How unlike you, Mike.
It is terribly unlike me, but as I say, as a kid, my mum and dad used to sing it, you know. And
yeah, I think we did when we were kids as well.
No, yeah, but I totally agree with you. She... to me, she is the Welsh Joan Collins, you know what I mean? They just go on and on and on, and they've been terribly glamorous, and they've just stood up and faced the world and got on with it and dealt with all the problems, and they're still around, live and fizzing today.
She had a tragic life in a way. Her daughter died, didn't she? Wasn't she found in the river underneath the... down by the Cheddar Gorge there.
Yeah, I think she was, yes.
And because years ago I was involved in some project. It was to do with writing a book about Shirley, actually.
Yeah.
And she didn't want to talk about her daughter, right. Understandably.
Yeah.
And also, unfortunately, apart from those Bond themes,
yes.
She never had an international recording career. It was primarily confined to the UK.
It was like the London Palladium, wasn't it? And things like that. No, I totally agree.
Yeah,
I totally agree. But a national treasure here, you don't think she ever cracked America or anything like that?
No. And nowadays, in order to be bookworthy, you've got to have an international profile. Yeah, it just is the way it is.
Yeah, sure. Now, I'm going to call you Miss James.
What's my name again?
That's right, yeah.
Mariella Frostrup.
That's right, yeah. What did Megan say to Kate?
Oh, is this a joke?
No. Did Megan say? Oh.
I say. No, what did Megan say to... Yeah.
No, she accused her of having baby brain. That's right, yeah.
Yeah. You know, that's so American, isn't it? Yeah, baby brain. I mean, in other words, you can't think straight because you're pregnant or you've just had a baby. I mean, for goodness sake.
I know. Yeah. By the way, just getting back to Harry for a minute, because he's on everywhere at the moment. But I don't think it's very nice to talk about your first explorations into sex the way he did. I thought it was tacky and I thought it was crude. And frankly, there's a woman in the world somewhere who he's spoken very lowly of.
Well, he has, and he wasn't very nice about it, was he? But, of course, the Daily Mail is now relentlessly exploring every avenue and trying to find that woman, and they will find her, and they will offer her a bunch of money and keep increasing the offer until she agrees to talk about it. You wait.
Yeah.
They will have a world exclusive there.
Well, I saw something close to that, didn't I, a couple of days ago, and they said she's now a vet working in a stud farm. I don't know whether that
he didn't identify the pub. Apparently he was deflowered by this older glamorous lady in a field behind a pub.
That's right, yeah.
They don't know exactly which pub, but one of the pubs that they think it might be, they went to talk to the publican, the landlord, and he said the woman he thinks it is now a vet.
Yeah, at a stud
farm. But this is only hearsay at this point.
Yeah, no, it is. You're absolutely right. Oh, dear.
A vet at a stud farm. Yeah, you couldn't make it up.
Can't get away from Harry. Listen, I want to talk about something which is really concerning to me. Have you ever been to Lindisfarne?
No, and I'm dying to go to Lindisfarne.
Lindisfarne's one of the most beautiful places on earth. I mean that. Now, Lindisfarne, of course, is actually called Holy Island, but it's known locally as Lindisfarne and gave the name to the famous northeast rock pop group Lindisfarne. Okay, but it is
that my dear friend Rab Nooks was involved in,
who, right?
who sadly died before Christmas. Yes, we talked about the album Fog on the Tyne. He wrote the track Watching the World Go By.
Watching the World Go By, and amazing, because I used to love Lindisfarne when I worked up there in the northeast. I went to one of their Christmas concerts. I think they still do a Christmas concert at the Newcastle Civic Hall every year. But anyway, so the point is, Lindisfarne is a real place. I don't know if people know that. And it's cut off from the mainland. It is an island, Holy Island, cut off from the mainland twice a day when the tide covers the walkway. So you have to just sit in the pub and wait till the tide goes out again. And I've stayed there in a rented cottage. There's a few little cottages you can rent. And it's you know, it's idyllic and blissful and all that. Now, the point is, the whole community survives on the unique fishing grounds around Lindisfarne for things like crab, not fishing in the sense of trawlers or not fishing in the sense of cod or anything like that, but things like crab and mussels and all that kind of stuff, you know what I mean? And I thought that when we left Europe, we had some control over our own destiny. There's some law now which extends around Europe, which means that the fishing grounds around Lindisfarne will soon become protected. This is the worry, and the fishing industry around Lindisfarne will close down. That will close down the community. I'm very worried about it.
Oh, dear. What are we going to do about it?
Well, you know, we've got to protest about it and stop it happening, because why should we let somebody dictate how we use the fishing grounds around our coast? We're an island.
So what can we do? Do we go to the local MP about this or what?
Well, first of all, read up on the Lindisfarne situation, then you'll find a petition. And then we can all get onto the petition to save Lindisfarne and tell all the busybodies who want to try and ban and restrict the amount. The fishing industry's been going on there for 1,000 years, okay? You know, for lobster and crab and mollusks and all that kind of stuff.
I love crab. Do you like eating crab?
No, I don't actually, no. I don't like eating lobster. Do you like lobster?
I love lobster, but I hardly ever have it because it's very bad for you, very high in cholesterol.
Yeah, I've never found lobster at all tasty. It's chewy, isn't it, lobster? I had it once.
It's quite meaty.
Yeah.
It's got a sort of, you know, the texture of monkfish, which I also love.
Right.
It's quite similar to that.
Oh, okay. I don't even like the idea of eating lobster because of the way they kill lobsters in boiling water and all that. I think
they've moved on from that now. I don't think it's the routine method anymore.
Well, you would hope so, but nevertheless, you know, seafood's not one of my things. Fish and chips is really what I extend to because, you know, I don't even really have many chips anymore, but certainly the fish, the cod and all that is something which I do aspire to. Now then, Miss Jones, I need to talk to you about your sleep body clock because there's new research saying that the right way to sleep is to wake up at about 2:30, get up for an hour and do some jobs and all that, and then go back to bed at 3:30. And that's the way cavemen used to do it because they were, you know, their system told them always to, they always lit a fire at the entrance of the cave to keep wild animals out, and they would always wake up as protector to their family to scour the, you know, the front of the cave and make sure there were no predators attacking them. And that's the way we should all do it now. And actually, that's pretty much my body clock arrangement. You know, I might go to bed at 9:30. I might wake suddenly at 3 o'clock and then there's no point in trying to go back to sleep again unless you get up and do something. There's always an email to answer. There's always, you know, something that you need to pick up on the television or something like that. Does this make sense to you, Miss Jones?
Not really, no, because we don't have the same lifestyle as your average caveman anymore,
do
we?
Yeah.
I tend to be awake at about 4-ish. I usually read the papers on my phone at that point.
Oh, good thinking.
I might make a cup of tea, go back to bed with it for a bit, but I read all that stuff.
Yeah.
I've been trying to wean myself off so much social media so far this year.
Yeah.
I was spending an awful lot of time on Twitter and Facebook, for example, and I've been trying to cut right down. So I only allow myself to look at those things very first thing in the morning. Yeah. And then avoid them for the rest of the day, unless I've got something specific to post.
Yeah.
Because you can waste so much of your day.
You can.
On social media.
You can. A friend of mine, good friend of mine, mentioned him on this before, Peter Hitchens, okay, used to work with Peter at the Daily Express, and we set up a bureau in Moscow together, which Peter staffed for 2 to 3 years. He had a brilliant correspondent, but we had to get over there and sort out, you know, all the building of the... it was under Gorbachev, you know, building of a bureau in Moscow. We were the first paper to do it. But anyway, the point of my story is Peter gets attacked relentlessly on Twitter because people are always arguing with him. And Peter very diligently replies to them all. Sometimes he'll take 4 or 5 different tweets. Each tweet's got, 270 characters or something, you know. And he will painstakingly reply. And I think, Peter, I don't know how you find the time. You know, he writes newspaper columns, he writes books, he gives lectures and all that, but he spends all his time, you're absolutely right, replying to these people on Twitter.
Yeah, I don't reply to most of them anymore because you have a look at how many followers they've got and it's like 179.
Oh, it might be 39 or something like that, you know,
So what is the point? They're just looking to augment their own influence.
Of course they are. If they get a reply
on the platform,
if they get a reply from somebody who's got 100,000 followers, they're absolutely made up, jumping for joy. Look, you know, 100,000 people are aware of me. So years ago, you know, I'd get angry and stop. Right now, I do one of two things. If somebody says something which I agree with, I just, you know, press the like button, or I might even send a message back saying thanks a lot, you know, or something like that. If I don't like it or I argue with it, I just block it and I don't make any response whatsoever. It's much easier and it's far less time consuming.
Yeah, we've got to be much more attentive to the time we spend on things.
Yeah, yeah.
Because time is running out.
Well, you're absolutely right. It is for us all. Now, we haven't had a Beatles story, so I better have one because it's Life on Planet 4.
Because it's a family show.
Family show as well. I read this little snippet somewhere. I mean... you're more aware than me that at the moment there's a programme being made about Abbey Road by Sir Paul McCartney's daughter. Is it Mary who's making it? Yeah, Mary McCartney.
Yeah, it's finished. It is made and it is out there. Yeah.
Oh, is it? Well,
yeah.
Oh, okay. Where is it available? Because, of course, the Get Back stuff was all on Disney, wasn't it? Wonder what this one's available on. Do you know?
Is it Apple Plus or something Apple like Plus. That? I haven't seen it.
Okay, yeah. Well,
I haven't actually watched it myself.
But anyway, this must be a bit of a little publicity plug for it. She tells S Magazine. Oh, here, you're right. If These Walls Could Sing on Disney, you're absolutely right. So it's on the Disney Channel, okay?
Disney, right.
And, okay. And Disney was the one they did the 8-hour Beatles on, so I must have that. That's great. Anyway, she told S Magazine how she nearly managed to wipe her father out, the legendary Sir Paul McCartney, because she asked him to go across the zebra crossing again, and they didn't organise the traffic properly. She said, as we were leaving the studio, I said to Dad, I'll film you on the crossing. And he went over, and this car totally didn't stop for him. 53-year-old Mary said, I was really nervous for hours afterwards, thinking what could have happened. Can you imagine if Paul McCartney had been knocked down and seriously injured on the Abbey Road zebra crossing? It would have been amazing. Well, yeah.
He's coming up 81, isn't he? He's got to be careful out there.
Yeah.
I'm sure he crosses roads all the time. He's an adult, you know, he doesn't need somebody to hold his hand to cross the road. But it would be horribly ironic if he were knocked down and killed on that particular zebra crossing.
It would be one of the great tragic rock stories of all time, wouldn't it? Like Buddy Holly dying in
God
the plane
forbid.
Crash.
Yeah. Please don't let that happen.
No, I totally agree. Right. Okay, folks, thank you very much indeed for having joined us today. And, let's all just plough on with life in these difficult times, and we will see you again this time next week. You know, when I got a bit older, I researched Dylan Thomas's history, and he's a legend to me because he drank himself to death by drinking 34 large whiskies in a single session, I think at the Chelsea Hotel in New York, wasn't it?
He did used to frequent the Chelsea, and he had his own place. Well, a place that he frequented so often, it was known as Dylan Thomas's hotel, which was Brown's Hotel.
Oh, was it? Yeah.
Down in Larne in Wales.
Oh, really?
And do you remember Neil Morrissey? No. Neil Morrissey,
yes,
who was in...
Yes, I do. He owned a hotel. He owned a hotel, Neil Morrissey.
No, he bought the very one that Dylan Thomas used to drink in.
There you go. The right way to sleep is to wake up at about 2:30, get up for an hour and do some jobs and all that, and then go back to bed at 3:30. And that's the way cavemen used to do it, because they were, their system told them always to, they always lit a fire at the entrance of the cave to keep wild animals out. And they would always wake up as protector to their family to scour the front of the cave and make sure there were no predators attacking them. And that's the way we should all do it now. And actually, that's pretty much my body clock arrangement. Now, Lindisfarne, of course, is actually called Holy Island, but it's known locally as Lindisfarne, and gave the name to the famous northeast rock pop group Lindisfarne. Okay.